Yes, we are back, and we're talking about what is going on with the economy and where to put your hard-earned money from someone who has lost quite a bit of it due to the fall of MF Global, although he still believes in diversifying, and that includes silver and gold. We're talking Gerald Celente, and if you haven't already, I would suggest becoming a Coast to Coast insider. Why? Well, because, you know, it's shows like these that give you such a diversity of information. It's unscripted, it's uncensored, and it's hard to find this. And we're talking with people that can really give us insight into who we are, what we, in the universe, and so many things. You'll just find so much up there. Believe me, it is worth a try. So go to coasttocoastam.com, click on insiders, and you'll be able to get any show you want downloaded right into your device of choice and listen anytime that you want. Stay right there, 120 seconds. We'll be back with Gerald Celente. We're back talking with Gerald Celente, who is the director of the Trends Research Institute. He's today's number one trend analyst, and he really regularly provides business and industry with customized presentations and commission research studies in over 300 trend categories. And Gerald, right before the break, we were talking about investing in gold and silver, how you still think it's a good way to diversify your portfolio, but there's different ways to do it. There's, you know, there's different options. There's, you know, mutual funds that are based on it. What's the best way actually to buy in to these commodities?
Well, to me, again, the lesson I learned from MF Global is that if you don't own it, you don't have it. See, if it's not in your possession, it's not yours. You know, what if there's a run on the banks? What if a brokerage firm goes bust because they've been raiding segregated accounts like they did with mine? There's laws. You know, you'll be able to, you know, sue them, and you'll get your money back from the broken brokerage firm. But it'll take years, and you might get pennies on the dollar. And by the way, I've gotten 70% of my money back.
Oh, okay.
From MF Global, yeah.
I didn't think you'd get any. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we got some of it back.
Okay.
But again, I took any. And the other way, if there's a run on the banks.
Okay.
You know, by the time you get your money back and the money's devalued. So again, to me, it's possession. That's what I've learned about this whole incident. And so silver, to me, the one I like the best is the 100-ounce silver bar. Because you figure it out, you know, if you have to carry this stuff, you know, it takes, 50 ounces of silver roughly to equal 1 ounce of gold. So you got a lot of weight there, and gold doesn't have a lot. And even today, as, you know, we're talking, and you look at trading, what's going on, you know, gold is up about $6 an ounce, silver's a little flat. So to me, silver... And again, I'm not saying that I'm right and this is the way you should do it. But for me, I know more about gold because I've been trading it so long. And I believe in it because it has other value that silver was also tied to production somewhat. And gold is too. You know, people buy jewelry and other. But gold, I mean, look, you know, talking about before Christmas. You know, what did they show up with? Was it myrrh, frankincense, and gold? You know, wasn't pork bellies? So gold has been around a long time.
It's true. Yeah.
And it has an intrinsic value. It goes throughout civilization from almost the beginning of it. And there's a reason for it. And matter of fact, in the next Trends Journal, in the top 12 trends, by the way, the whole Trends Journal will be out on Monday. But in the spring edition, we're doing a whole story about gold in its many forms throughout the centuries and why it means more than, you know, just another commodity.
Okay. Well, tell me about gold, though, specifically in silver. Where do you get it? Where do you sell it when you do have it? Is there some sort of regulated industry to this, or you just have to go to the local guy down the street?
Well, there are a number of, you know, you do your due diligence. There are a number of big names out there, and that, when people ask us, by the way, who do we buy from, we give them a whole long list. We make it very clear. You know, you have no idea, Rob, how many times gold companies have contacted us and want us to give recommendations.
Yeah.
And I won't even give recommendations from the ones that I buy from. So there's a number of big names out there You go out there, and with the internet, there's all the information about who got shafted, who didn't, and there are a number of reputable ones out there. So that's what I really suggest.
All right. Well, is there?
And you know, you made a point about selling it.
Yeah.
You buy it. You always pay more. And when you sell it, you always get less.
A little bit less.
But
yeah.
What's good about it is that, you know, I've had my ups and downs in life. And gold has, in the worst of times, got me through the worst of times. One of the things that I did one time when things, for a variety of reasons, weren't working out, I needed money. And I went to pals, buddies. And I said, listen, you know, here's some, I need X amount of dollars. No friend wants to loan you a lot of money. And I said, but what I'll do is I'll give you gold to hold. And the deal is this. In 2 years, I'll pay you back. If I can't pay you back, you keep the gold. I give a little, make up a little agreement. And in 2 years, if that gold is worth less than it is, I'll pay you the difference than what you loaned me. And if it's worth more and I can't pay you back, you get to keep it. Every one of my pals loaned me money.
It's a good offer.
They had collateral.
Yeah, knowing about gold.
I got it all back. I bought it all back. But the good thing about owning gold is the purpose. Is just what you said about it's not that easy to sell. You're going to take a loss. It's different than when you need money really quickly and you write a check. You end up emptying out your account. When you have gold, when you have silver, you don't sell it that quickly. You think twice. You make other provisions. Your mind starts going in different directions. So it's for me, again, that's how it's worked in many different ways.
Well, of course, this is something that hits close to home for people. The other thing is energy and the costs of oil. How big does alternative energy play in 2012?
Alternative energy could be the big game changer. That every forecast that I'm making has to do with the economy could change if a real alternative energy comes online. There's a rumor going out that Home Depot has bought the patent rights to a, for lack of a low energy nuclear, what do they call it? In the old days, they used to call it coal fusion. They came and gave it a new name now.
Okay.
And this guy Rossi in Italy is supposedly perfected the system where for every little bit of energy you put in, you get a lot more out. And so there's rumor going on just within the last couple of days that Home Depot has bought the rights to this. To think that we are now in the 21st century burning coal and oil is a fossil idea in itself. When you think about They built the atom bomb during World War II in Los Alamos for the equivalent of what's $20 billion today. As I mentioned earlier, we wasted $1 trillion on the Iraq War. Could you imagine if the government funded a $1 trillion operation to come up with an alternative energy? You think we have the brain power to do it? I do. So to me, 2012 could be the breakout year. And again, when I say, people say, I'm pessimistic about the future. You know, as I said, I've been at this for 30 years. I want to read you something.
All right.
This is from German Chancellor Angela Merkel, ringing out the new year and bringing in the new. I have never heard a world leader speak like this. 2012 will no doubt be more difficult than 2011. It'll be the harshest test in decades. From France, Sarkozy, this extraordinary crisis, meaning the Eurozone crisis, without doubt, the most serious one since World War II, is not over. Now, this is a Frenchman talking about the most serious thing happening since World War II, and a German saying it's going to get worse. And here's from the Danish Prime Minister. Again, this is their New Year's Day welcoming in speech.
Yeah.
That fat year behind us, we must prepare ourselves for some lean years ahead. I've never heard, the baloney these people throw out, these politicians. Oh, I did such a great job last year getting us through those difficult times, and we have to look with hope and confidence into the future. That's the kind of jive they usually lay out.
Yeah.
They're telling us, hold on. If they're saying how bad it is, whew, you could bet how bad it's going to get.
It's going to get worse. Well, let's talk about some of the different changing landscapes. We're seeing Big Brother on the internet. There's tales of these large-scale computer database breaches. What's going to happen on that front?
It all ties again together. Economic law, martial law, Battlefront USA, where they're taking our rights away from us, and now Big Brother's going to be in our computer.
How do you see it?
They're going to continue to pass these laws that it go under the guise of, you know, protecting privacy acts and copyright infringement. And they give, and of course, they exaggerate what's being stolen, and they jack up the price. They inflate it to imaginary numbers. And then they're going to use a reason to close down the internet and put it under total government control. And to me, as I said, as I see everything unfolding worldwide, what's going to allow them to do it, just like the Patriot Act. How about the Raping of the Constitution Act? It was put in place after 9/11. So they'll use either a false flag or a real event to happen where they'll do it again. And I believe the real event is going to be Iran. I'm very concerned about what's going on in Iran. And look what they're doing. They start wars like, let's start a war. Look what Obama did, that wonderful liberal peacenik. And look at he went into Libya. I'll never forget it. March of 2011. The same day, by the way, that Bush started the war in 2003 in Iraq, to the date. And he goes, he hits the stage and says, hey, we're going into Libya. We're going to run a humanitarian mission and get rid of that dictator. And then he hops on a plane to Rio with his wife, his mother-in-law, and his kids. Doesn't ask Congress. And now they're firing it up on Iran. Every one of those Republican candidates, you know, they're all talking tough. And by the way, anybody that wants to go fight a war, send yourself, send your money, send your wife, send your kids. There's a job out there for you. They're outsourcing all the services to the defense contractors. If you really believe in this, go lead the charge or shut your mouth. I'm watching these guys out there, Newt Gingrich. What's this guy now to Santorum? He looks like Mr. Rogers going to Washington with his cheap little vest on, little outfit, and that little pudgy guy. He talks real tough. All of these little chicken hawks. Romney, do you know what Romney's my age? You know what Romney, how he beat the Vietnam War?
How'd he do it?
Oh, this is a riot. He was, now remember, he's a Mormon. He was a Mormon missionary in France. Oh, yeah, brilliant. A Mormon missionary in all Catholic, wine-drinking, cigarette-smoking, coffee-addicted, Brigitte Bardot-loving France. Oh, yeah, you're there as a missionary, and that gets you out of the war. And now you're telling you're going to go and get tough with Iran. Hey, Mittens, pack up your gear and go lead the charge. The same thing with this guy Huntsman. Another guy, his daddy's worth $1 billion. He's never served a day in his life. You know what he said? He can't live with a nuclear Iran. Hey, you can't live with it. Go do something about it. Go, don't go send somebody else's kid. All of these people that are talking tough, I've had it with them.
Okay, well, is your prediction for Iran and what's going to happen there based on who gets elected president?
No. It's in the works already.
Or who's leading up? Okay, so tell me what your prediction is for Iran.
We believe there's going to be a major conflict that's going to go on either between Israel and Iran or the United States and Israel and Iran. And something is going to happen that's going to provoke a hot war from the Cold War that we're already in now as it's heating up.
A hot war.
Here's why. It's very simple. The United States has declared an act of war against Iran already. In that National Defense Authorization Act bill, President Obama has now imposed sanctions upon Iran that are essentially an act of war. No government around the world is going to be able to buy oil from Iran. 60% of Iran's GDP is their export of oil. When people talk about, and people that know a little bit about history know about this, you know, Japan, the United States cut them off from their oil supply before the war started. Now we're putting Iran out of business. It's an act of war. They are the third largest oil producers in the world. The reason why oil prices are going up now is attributed to the Iranian conflict that's heating up. So what I believe they're doing, I know what they're doing. And by the way, the Senate voted 100-0 to put more sanctions on Iran. Now, let's remember what this is all about, by the way. Iran might have a nuclear bomb or maybe building one. Yeah? So join the club. How many is Israel? What, about 300-500 of them? How many does the United States have? About 10,000 of them? How many does Russia have? How many does Pakistan have? How many does India have? How many does France have? How many does Britain have? But they're going to get one, and we don't like them. So what are you going to do, start a war? That's right. I can't live with a nuclear Iran. Oh, guess what? World War III begins. They're talking about it.
Well, do you think they're going to close down the Straits of Hormuz as they're threatening?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, but you agree attacking Iran would be a very bad idea on the part.
Bad idea. It's the beginning of World War III. These are the Persians.
Yeah.
They're not going anywhere. There are 70 million of them. People should know what went on between Iraq and Iran if they forgot. The lovely little war that George Bush Sr. started. I remember with Donald Rumsfeld, that other little war hawk out there, visiting Saddam Hussein and showing up with a pair of golden spurs when he was our boy to launch a war against Iran that Jimmy Carter started after the Shah fell. They fought for 8 years against Iraq and Iran. It's estimated that Iran lost over 1 million people. They didn't give up 1 inch of ground.
Well,
these are the Persians. They're not going anywhere.
There's a good argument to say that Pakistan is more unstable and capable of proliferation than Iran would be.
I would say.
Yeah. And yet we don't.
And again, you don't start wars.
Yeah.
And again, look at the people that are starting the wars. Who could get away with this? We just lost the Iraq war. They called it victory. I didn't see any victory parade.
No. No, that was just a little whimpering little thud when the boots left the ground, and that's about it. We don't know where it's going to go, but certainly there's still unrest between, you know, the Shiites and the Sunnis. There's still a bit of a civil war out there.
A bit of the one. Oh, and look at the one that's now in Libya. Pick up the news. They're fighting each other. Hey, good thing Gaddafi's gone, man. Things would have fell apart.
So you see,
you think we'd be there? You think we'd be in Libya or Iraq if their major exports were broccoli?
So you see continuing unrest, and is it going to be? You say it's going to be a hot war. So you know who's going to break first? Well, what's going to happen and trigger this? Do you think? Is it going to be about oil?
It's going to be a false flag.
Yeah.
Look how they lie. Remember the Iraq war? Hey, remember the weapons of mass destruction in Taiz?
Sure,
Al-Qaeda?
We all do.
Yeah. Remember where are they?
So you think there's going to be another false flag?
How about that lovely Vietnam War? You know, the one with the Gulf of Tonkin incident that never happened?
Right. USS Liberty?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, come on. Well, how's it going to happen? When these psychopaths make something up.
So
they're provoking war. It's an act of war to cut off a country from doing business. And and by the way, the Europeans take in about 20% of the Iranian oil.
Okay.
And again, pick up the news. That little chicken hawk Sarkozy. I can't stand these little guys with big mouths. They talk so tough.
Yeah.
To have other people do their fighting. He's now talking about ratcheting up the sanctions against Iran.
Yeah.
So now you're going to lose 20% of your customer base.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that these types of things have happened for seemingly no understandable reason. We're trying to make sense of it all. We're talking with Gerald Celente. We're talking about future trends, and we're going to get into it right after the break. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM. Stay tuned. Yeah, we're talking with Gerald Celente, and he is the director of the Trends Research Institute. He's someone that for over 20 years has been charged with the task of looking at the trends and forecasting where things are going. And we're going to talk about how things are going to come to a climax in 2012. We know things are bad, but we want to get from him safe havens and your questions right after this. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. And Gerald, you have been saying that this economic downturn that we are in right now, that the world is sliding into, is going to be worse than the Great Depression. Why do you say that?
It'll be worse because it's spreading worldwide at a level that even surpasses that. And by the way, when we look at the data, let's remember a couple of things. Housing in the United States has fallen further percentage-wise decline than it did during the Great Depression. And it's not getting better. It's only getting worse. Every time they come out with a report, housing prices go down. Housing is in Great Depression era levels. Number two, back in the Depression, we were an ascending society. There was growth opportunity. It was always there in front of you. We don't have that now. When you look at what's going on in the major cities, you're lucky if 50% of these kids are graduating high school, and the numbers are much lower. They're just pushing them out. Back then, we weren't holding mortgages, and people didn't own houses to the levels that they own them now, or have the debt levels that we have. That's what makes it so different. And again, this is global. And just to go back for one second about Iran.
Yeah.
The other link to look to what's going to happen and how it could flare off is Syria. Who is Syria's closest ally? Iran. Syria is in turmoil now. Here's what White House spokesman Jay Carney said. I love the name Carney. It's a perfect name for him. Carney, that's the slang for carnival man. The perfect carnival man. The perfect con man to spit out the words. Quote, as sniper fire, torture, and murder in Syria continue, it is clear that the requirements of the Arab League Protocol have not been met. We believe it's past time for the Security Council to act. Hey, how about another no-fly zone? I got it. A humanitarian mission. Yeah, that's it. We're going to save them Syrians. Syria, Iran, they're the two greatest allies. This whole thing is coming together.
Well, what about the idea that America used to be the empire of production? Now it's an empire of consumption. Have we lost our way?
Yes, and that's, by the way, one of the trends, and this is the Trends Journal, as I mentioned, will be out on Monday, and one of the trends that we're talking about, we have the trends that can turn it around. You know, and one of them, and we call it repatriate. We need to bring everything back here that we can. Globalization only helped the transnational companies. It was a big lie, and it's a fact. You could look at the day that they stamped NAFTA into our brain and look at our quality of life index on every level and look how it's declined since then. The big lie that we were going to get rid of them dirty jobs and have high-paying service sector jobs. Oh, yeah, great service sector jobs, service, servant, servitude. Oh, yeah, how about being a clerk and wishing everybody have a nice day when you take their money? I mean, the jobs that are being created are mostly junk jobs that don't pay a lot. And the jobs that should be paying more that we are creating that aren't paying a lot because they provide such a wonderful service, of course, is healthcare. You know, so we have growth in those jobs, but they're not paying much money. And the service sector are paying lousy. So we're saying bring production back home. Repatriate. We're 312 million people strong. And you go back, again, I'm only saying what worked before. What worked before the Glass-Steagall Act? What worked before they gave our country away to the transnationals so they could ship manufacturing to cheap labor countries and then bring the junk back and mark it up? It's not everyday low prices. It's about quality. Go onto the internet, look up decaying Detroit, and they have all of these photos of Detroit going into the dust. And you look at them, and you see the grandeur. You see the craftsmanship. You see what America used to be about quality. And now what's happened? Bottom line, big box stores, everyday low prices, everyday low prices, everyday low quality. Everyday low prices, everyday low quality, everyday low paying jobs. We need to bring it back home. I'm an American firster. This is my country. I'm not xenophobic. I'm not an isolationist. I travel the world. I consider myself a citizen of the world. It has nothing to do with it. I support my neighbors. I buy all my meats from Fleischer, the butcher, around the shop, around the corner. And you want to open a business? It's another one of our trends. Call it going out in style. You asked me about the Depression. Look at the way that people dressed during the Depression. Look at the music that we had. It was the hottest, happiest music. It was swing time during the Depression. People didn't dress as cafones. They didn't go out looking like slobs. They had style. The people that are going to win, and I mentioned Fleischer's the butcher. You want to open up a hot dog stand? Get them from your local butcher. They taste like nothing else anybody's made. You even want to open up a hamburger joint? Make a hamburger that nobody's ever had before. Yep. Affordable sophistication.
So generally speaking, we should return to traditional values, the principles that made this country great in the first place.
It's simple, exactly. But the money junkies are in charge. You hear what they talk about? The bottom line. Oh, you want to go for the bottom line? Great. Keep going to the bottom. You see, the money junkies have no conscience. They have no boundaries, no bounds, just like the meth addict or anybody else.
It's sickness. Well, okay, I'm going to stretch your prognosticating abilities. We've been talking about 2012 for the most part of this interview, but I want to get your take on where America's going to be in 2020. What's that year going to look like?
Totally up to the people. That's what I'm saying. It's not the leaders. It's the people. You know that Hindu saying, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. Anyone that's practiced at anything for a real long time knows what I'm talking about. There's teachers, and then there's the teacher, the master. When the people are ready, the leaders will appear. The people aren't ready. I'm talking about style and quality. It's up to us to change. It changes with the individual. I don't know what 2020 is going to look like. It depends on how the people evolve. It's either evolve or dissolve. And right now we're in dissolve mode. We're going back. Again, you could talk about food. You could talk about style. You could talk about quality. I mean, isn't it wonderful going into a big box store with all the charm of a large self-storage unit? And then you look at those old movies during the 30s of people going into department stores and how fine everyone was dressed. It's up to the people, Rob. You have to get strong physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And the higher each one of us gets in performing to the maximum capability that we have within us, our unique greatness, a renaissance, that's what it takes. But not when you're branded. And right now, we're in the branded mode.
We have to throw off this tyranny of these silent oppressors.
Yes.
All right.
They're not so silent.
Well, they speak in code. They're quite mysterious. They hide behind things that we perceive as helpful and institutions that look sturdy. But that facade is crumbling.
And it's perpetuated by the mass media. I mean, you know. Mm-hmm.
It's just a big echo chamber. Really.
It really is. McLuhan wrote about this, you know, in detail that was going to happen. The great book in the 50s? What was it about advertising? Hidden Persuaders. I mean, you know, one after another.
Well, there's so many people that want to talk to you. There's so many questions that people are dying to get. Let's take some phone calls. What do you say?
Love it.
Great. Let's go to, Dave, Hollywood, California. He's on the wild card line. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
General, ciao. Come stai?
Yeah, bene, bene.
Bene, bene. Senti, listen, You know, you haven't talked about the Roman Catholic Church enough because I believe they are behind all this. You know, there is a long time ago in Venice, Italy, there was a ghetto. And you might have heard of this. There were these Jewish bankers. That's all they did all day long. They printed money and lent it at interest. The Roman Catholic Church basically controlled them. But they did not practice that themselves because they knew that anybody that prints money and charges interest is a scumbag, is the lowest, has no conscience, has no soul. So, and as you know, Jewish bankers don't believe in soul. They don't, they have none of that. So Wall Street is run by corporate Satan, okay? As you have, you know, because you mentioned this. But I want to say that usury, you know, I didn't hear you say anything about usury. And this whole thing about Iran getting one bomb to destroy Israel, you know, this is total idiocy. I mean, they know that if they did that, it's over for them. So I'm not worried about them. I am worried about these people on Wall Street that are committing this crime, that are killing all of us with their greed, okay? The Goldman Sachs, like you said, and you're absolutely 1,000% right. I think you have a lot of courage in what you're saying, because these are criminals. Henry Paulson, Bush, they're all criminals. Dick Cheney, they're all criminals.
Do you have a question, Dave?
Yes, the question was, you know, how can these people do this? How can they get away with usury? This is a Roman Catholic country. Why doesn't the Pope, why doesn't the church come out and speak up against this?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I don't think, Dave, we want to paint everyone with one brush. What do you have to say about?
I agree. I wouldn't pay too much. I mean, it's criminal activity in every country.
Yeah.
David, hey, look what's going on in India. You want to talk about corruption? I mean, it's a revolution going on. And by the way, just to segue, Dave, just for one second, I appreciate your comments. I cannot make it clearer that, again, you know, not in a religious sense. You know, just listen to the scriptures. The love of money is the root of all evil. And we have elevated a banker to a too big to fail. The bankers are in charge of everywhere, as I said, you know, that they're ahead of every temple. And I mentioned now about, you know, yes, to pick up what you said, Rob. You know, you don't paint one picture. Well, brush, this is a lot of strokes. You go to any country, the corruption is running rampant for the love of money and power. So look what's going on in India, because this segues into a very big trend on what we could look like in 2012, and 2020, rather. I mentioned repatriate. Bring production back home, and pay people a living wage.
Yep.
When this country, when the middle class could live comfortably, and these money junkies, nobody should make money except them.
Yeah.
Number two, I mentioned quality and style. Number three, and it goes back to India, it goes back to Europe, and it comes back to the United States, and it's one of the top trends of 2012. Secessionism.
Yeah.
It's too big. It's not working. We got a bunch of guys, a gang of 535 congressmen and senators total. A gang of 535 telling 312 million people how to tie our shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a mob.
Well, and again, corruption and greed—it's spread across every culture, and I don't agree with him as far as picking out any particular.
That's what I said. Yeah. That's what I said. India, you name the country.
Yeah.
But to us, the only way that we become a nation of prosperous people that evolve as to a higher civilization. Oh, going back to the Depression, by the way.
Yeah.
Look at the money that the government spent on art.
Oh.
Look at the Art Deco of that era.
You mean the beautification?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now art's the first thing cut out of any budget, and they think art is this modern art junk, you know. Mm-hmm. There's different kinds of art. There's art in music. There's art of food. There's art in architecture, and on. So art is one of the ways of finding the true meaning of the human spirit. And if you don't believe me, put out the word Renaissance. You know, if you can't see, if you follow the Black Plague, it was built on the belief of art finding the way, the true meaning of the human spirit. So the future is in our hands.
Yeah.
But we have to break down into smaller units, just like the USSR couldn't control everybody from the Kremlin, from the central government. It can't happen effectively in the USSA.
All right, Gerald.
And by the way,
yeah,
all you people that call Obama a socialist, the Marxist, the merger of state and corporate powers by definition, again, too big to fail, et cetera, it's called fascism.
All right, let's jump back to the phones there. So many people want to talk to you. Let's go east of the Rockies. Beautiful. Lansing, Michigan. Paul, welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Good evening. Gerald, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Hey, my big question, very simply, is one thing you really haven't mentioned is that that $15.2 trillion juggernaut that just keeps on growing and growing and growing. George had a guest on, and maybe you could explain this better to me. He mentioned one way to watch what's going on to see if the bottom is about to fall was the dollar index. That if that dollar index were to hit 70 or go below, he's running for the hills, the guest, quote unquote, said. I never really understood that. Could you take a second if you knew what he meant?
Well, I think what he was referring to, I'm not sure, was the dollar index compared to the basket of currencies. I'm not sure if that's what he meant. And I really don't, I can't answer that intelligently without, you know, I don't know. And he knows probably more about that field than I do. But here's what you have to watch out for. What's happening now, because the euro is collapsing in the eurozone, a lot of money's coming into dollars. Money from around the world is pouring into the United States looking for a safe haven to put the money into. So it's propping up the dollar temporarily. And that's very important to know. Because but that doesn't make any sense to me, because jumping out of the euro or another currency to get into the dollar is like getting out of the Titanic and getting onto the Lusitania for safe passage. So there's going to become a point when the dollar does collapse. And I would watch it very simply against the Canadian dollar, against the Norwegian krona, and the euro.
How's the euro doing? It's still...
The euro's doing terrible. The euro's down to, you know, it's down to, I think, about 130 to the dollar. You know, but remember when it started, it was at 115.
Yeah.
And those are the ones, and the yen confuses me, because I don't know why anybody would invest in Japan. You know, and I think there's a lot more problems coming out there. So those are the currencies that I would look at to see how the dollar plays against those. And then you could see the change happening. If there's a change, and the euro, to me, is not going to be a euro probably by 2020. I don't believe the euro is going to. And when I talk about secession, you're going to start seeing the European Union break up, I believe, and the countries getting their own currencies again. There's going to be a currency war. The pattern's playing itself out, just like the crash of 1929, the Depression, currency wars, trade wars, world wars. We're in that same kind of cycle.
Is there a currency you think is the most stable?
Right now, I like the Norwegian krona.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, because it's a small country. They're sitting on a ton of oil. They have huge reserves in cash that they put away for their people. And it's a pretty civilized place.
Yeah. And if you had to pick a country that will surprise everybody when it comes to being the new leader in this future economy, which one would it be?
I don't think there will be just one.
Okay, a block of countries?
It's going to be a free-for-all. Some countries will do well, but none will be leading because it's too big. It's too big for one to lead.
Right. Well, hold it right there. We'll come back with more questions for Gerald Celente about what is happening in the world and how it's going to unfold all around us. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.